Hey y'all, what's good? This is your girl Flo, and you have just tuned in to the Flo Experience. Thank you so much for just hanging in there with me. Thank you for being patient. I know this is extremely late. I've had a lot of stuff going on here lately. I had to go back home, helping my mother with a few things, visit some family, and you know, just trying to stay above water and keep things going. And so a lot of times, you know, as they say, life gets in the way. Well, I'm not going to consider it as getting in the way, because that's to say that, you know, life is a burden, and it isn't. It's beautiful, and we should definitely take time to reflect every now and again, even when it's chaotic, that everything's going to be all right. And I believe that in my heart. Today's episode is going to be entitled Farewell. And I use that term because tomorrow we say farewell to our fallen soldier, our brother, our leader, a father, son, and an icon to the hip hop community, Mr. Nipsey Hussle, whose real name is Ermias Askedon. And I'm using the term farewell because because my grandmother used to always say, don't ever say goodbye, because goodbye means forever. And even in death, we know that our spirits will meet again. And farewell is just a way of saying until the next time, or until we meet again. And so tomorrow we say farewell to a young man whose spirit was just too big for this earth to withstand. He is of Eritrea descent, which is an Eastern African country that gained its independence from Ethiopia in 1999. His untimely death has shook the hip hop community to its core. And it has hit home on a more local level in every city across the country. And you ask why? Because Nipsey Hussle was more than just a rapper. He was a revolutionary. He was a visionary, and he was the voice of the voiceless. He was a brother that came from the same turf and same dirt that we are all so very familiar with, that rose above his situation in a way that didn't change who he was. He was still relatable. You know, our brothers in the streets could still look at that man and see in his eyes that he hadn't altered who he was, and they respected that. And, you know, we miss the fact that, you know, our brothers need that. They need to be able to have that familiarity from someone that is trying to rise above the things that are keeping them down. You know, if they can look at that and see somebody who's familiar, then they are encouraged. Today, I'm going to highlight a few things about his life and his legacy, and touch on a few concerns that I have regarding some of the reactions that I've noticed on social media that disturb me. And I'll also highlight a few of the social media posts that express an outpouring of love, pain, and also unity. So as we begin this podcast, I ask that you you know, just bear with me. There are a lot of things that I am going to address where Nipsey is concerned. And it may take me a little while, but I want to do justice to his legacy by making certain that I highlight the things that meant most to us in losing our brother, Mr. Nipsey Hussle. With that being said, the first thing that I want to point out is the article a couple of articles. The first one is the LA Times, and I learned about this article when Snoop highlighted it on his Instagram page, kind of letting them know, you know, giving them a salute, saying that they did him well by speaking well of him. And just a couple things that they mentioned. At the age of 19, Nipsey Hussle took his money he earned hustling on the streets in South LA and bought a plane ticket to his father's homeland, a tiny country in Eastern Africa that fought a brutal war to secure its place in the world of Eritrea. That trip split his life in two, before and after. From a young man steeped in gang culture with aspirations of being a rapper to a community activist with an entrepreneurial spirit who earned a Grammy nod. And he stayed there, says, for 3 months to truly embrace his culture, his heritage. He made meaningful connections around the dinner table with family he had never met, but most of all, for the first time in his life, lived in a place where people with chocolate skin like his own were in charge. And when you coming from a place like South Central LA, yeah, we all got our moms and popses, and we see black folks, our older generation, who have businesses that their parents may have established, or, you know, they get out here and they try to establish their own. But it's only so much growth that you see that develop, especially if there are politics involved. So he saw it in a bigger picture. I mean, that really opened up his eyes. And when he returned to LA, he saw the way things could be, according to the article. The world was suddenly bigger than the Crenshaw district of South LA, where he grew up with his mother and grandmother, and where neighborhoods often determine gang ties. And this, they said, that he said in an interview and in rap lyrics that he was tied to the notorious Rollin' 60s Crips. But police said it was likely a personal grudge and not a gang violence that led to Hustle being fatally shot outside of his clothing store. He was 33. And I'm glad that they did that. I'm glad that they pulled back on trying to make this about gang violence. Because yes, there is gang violence. Yes, there is black on black crime. But, you know, let's not allow tunnel vision on that specific to, you know, sidetrack us so that we ignore some of the other issues that our community faces, because it's not the only issue. But anyway, moving forward, The Root posted another article called Africa News, and he was eulogized by Ethiopians and also Eritreans, and how proud they were of him, you know. It's just basically just, you know, quotes a couple of people that are of the Eritrean descent that live here in America. And one of the individuals stated, when we heard there was an Eritrean rapper out here, we were fans before we even heard his music. So, you know, and then they went on to say that he was an icon for us. And then they highlight his heritage, as I just did. And they talk a little bit about the province of Eritrea and how they kind of got their independence in 93. And then there's another person that spoke out that said, when he first came out, we were all so excited to know there was a Habesha rapper out there. Definitely sparked some pride. So they were definitely proud of him, and it made them proud of being who they were, because he definitely spoke highly of his heritage. He embraced it. He respected it. You know, his trip there helped him to probably learn a whole lot more about what it means to be a revolutionary and a visionary. The Wall Street Journal went on to say, going beyond the music, Nipsey Hussle promoted job skills and investments. The LA recording artist worked to revive his neighborhood and link the inner city with Silicon Valley. And he did. You know, he was borderline a techie. Okay. There are clips of this brother talking about cryptocurrency, which a lot of us have, you know, that's just a fad. But you know what? That's exactly the mentality they want you to have. They don't want you to investigate. They don't want you to explore options. They don't want you to be knowledgeable. They don't want you to have that leg above or a step above in our future. And I've had this conversation with so many know-it-alls. And I mean that in most sincere respect. But you don't know it all. You don't know everything. Because it's not working for you now doesn't mean it's not going to be the way of the future, because I can guarantee you, they said the same thing about cable TV, that cryptocurrency, although it's probably kind of simmered down and maybe it doesn't have a future, who knows, but don't ignore it. Pay attention to your options and learn about stock and trade. And that's some of the things that he wanted his community to learn about, especially with technology. It says some hip hop artists celebrate lifestyles revolving around fashion, flashy cars, and flashy jewelry. Nipsey Hussle trafficked in some of that imagery, but also included more unusual themes in his music. Long-term investment and career development. The Grammy-nominated rapper shot to death March 31st. Supplemented his musical career by trying to revitalize his scruffy Hyde Park neighborhood in South LA. He bought real estate, opened a clothing store and other businesses, and with a friend, he invested in an organization called Vector 90, providing workspaces and training in science and technology. His music, he said, he was partly about how to succeed as a young Black entrepreneur. Quote, in our culture, there is a narrative that says, follow the athletes, follow the entertainers, he told LA Times last year. And that's cool, but there should be something that says, follow Elon Musk, follow Mark Zuckerberg. And those are the conversations that, you know, I'm having with my kids. You know, I want them to learn the importance of thinking outside of the narrative that's all we can do is entertain them, okay? Because that's also a mentality that plagues our culture, where we believe that that's all we're good at, that's all we can do. When we have a whole brain under our skull, we can do whatever we want to do. He hoped to provide a bridge between Silicon Valley and the inner city. You know, and that's phenomenal. Those are the things that was great about Nipsey. And those are just, you know, that just scratches the surface. That's not at all, you know, everything. I listened to a brother by the name of Sean King. I'm sure a lot of y'all know him. He's a journalist and an activist. He did a podcast and he eulogized Nipsey on his podcast called The Breakdown. And I'm just going to play a couple of things that interest me in his eulogy for this brother, because it's important for us to understand, you know, that although his death was untimely, he deserves to have not only the recognition for his life, but we need to examine the issues around his death as well, because it's too bad that we choose to only see one side of things when it comes to losing our brothers and our sisters. To me, that's a disservice. But I'm going to allow you to hear Sean's message and his outpouring of love for Nipsey, because I think it's important. And I also feel that that's a great way for us to see it from another point of view. Here we go. Sean King, The Breakdown.
Of course, we compare his murder to that of Tupac and Biggie. And in some ways, I think we have to compare them because they were two of the most important figures in hip-hop, in music, really even in American culture. And they were both shot and killed. One, it hardly seems like it, but that was 23 years ago. And we also forget that Tupac and Biggie were just babies. Those brothers were just 24 and 25 years old. And we really didn't even get to see them in the prime of their careers. We didn't get to see them hit their stride in their 30s or 40s. With Biggie and Tupac, we were just left to dream about what they could have become, and we'll never know. And I think that's one of the things that hurts so badly about Nipsey's murder. We did get to catch a glimpse of his maturity. He was 33 years old, and over the past few years, he was really becoming much more than just a Los Angeles area rapper. He was becoming a leader in South Central. He was absolutely becoming a key leader in hip-hop. And I don't just mean artistically. And he was an artistic leader in hip-hop. But Nipsey had become a voice for ownership, for entrepreneurship, for personal responsibility, and for what happens when you are fully dedicated to putting in the grind and hard work toward your goals. Had Biggie and Tupac lived, I hope we would have eventually seen what we're just now getting to see from Nipsey, which is what happens when wisdom and maturity meets hip-hop and street knowledge. Nipsey brought all of that together and really set the tone for all of hip-hop, for status and success looking like more than cars and jewelry. But Nipsey made owning property and owning businesses look cool. He made it look cool to hire people from the hood that nobody else would even give a chance and give them jobs. And here's the thing, Nipsey has always been different. I want to play a clip for you all from an interview of Nipsey that's almost 15 years old, when he was just a baby-faced youngster trying to become a full-time hip-hop artist, where he shocked the brother who was interviewing him when he told the guy that what he really cared about was buying land and buying assets that grow in value. The video is on my Instagram page if you want to check it out and see how young it is, but I want you to hear it. Here it goes.
The breakdown.
You know, how come you're not blinging and having all kind of crazy diamonds and all that? I guess you're here to get your money right, huh?
All the time. I mean, you know, all that is cool for the image and all that, but all them is liabilities, you feel me? I'd rather invest in some real estate, you know what I'm saying?
Something wait, can you repeat that again, man? You're up-and-coming artist. What did you say you want
to
do?
I said invest in some assets as opposed to trick off my money on some liabilities like diamonds. You know what I'm saying? Cars that lose value, so you drive them off the lot.
So you're trying to get land.
Exactly, homie. A real asset. Take care of my peoples, because, you know, it look good, but at the end of the day, you're losing value, homie. It ain't appreciating, it's depreciating. It's losing value.
What do you think, why do you think it's so hard for people to get that message? You know, I mean, one half, you get guys that say they got to impress the females. Female ain't trying to talk to you unless you blinged out. On the other hand, you got other people feel like they got to show off to the homies and impress them with their riches. I mean, what do you think is there? How do we get that out of that mindset?
Man, I feel like that's insecurity. Material things ain't nothing.
I love that clip so much because I think I'd honestly assumed that Nipsey had just recently started caring about things like owning land. But what we see is that he was always marching to the beat of his own drummer. What I've seen over the last few days is that other hip-hop artists knew that about him as well. They all knew that Nip was different. I don't think I've ever seen hip-hop artists be so devastated. I had a chance to speak over the past few days with both Meek Mill and T.I., and both of them were just so crushed about Nipsey's murder. I had at least a dozen different rappers and athletes tell me that they had just broke down in tears and devastation over his murder because they all knew that he was special. He was their peer, but they also looked up to him and admired him. I'll call that a peer hero. They admired Nipsey's business acumen. They admired his love for his family, for his city, for his community. They loved how good he was at his craft and how he kept finding ways to get better and better. Nipsey Hussle was your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. And I don't think another current rapper in all of hip-hop had more respect from other rappers than Nipsey Hussle, maybe except for Jay-Z. And for most of his career, Nipsey chose to remain completely independent, without a label, and he did that on purpose, funding and producing and distributing his own music with his own price points and his own style and substance. And he did something that had really never been done before in quite the way he did it.
So that's just, you know, it's a 20-minute 26-minute eulogy. Again, that's The Breakdown with Sean King. His podcast is also available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or he said if you're using an Android to use the Google Podcast. But you know, that just expounds on why I have to speak against the criticism that was definitely put out there when this brother passed away. I mean, you've got folks that, you know, truly want to dumb down the fact that we are mourning for this brother because we didn't know him. And, you know, we got to stop that also. We shouldn't have to know another young black man or another young black woman in order to have compassion for that person's life, especially when it is tragically taken away from us, especially when that life has meant so much to their surroundings and their community. And when that life was a beacon of light and of hope to, you know, the change that we're all anticipating, that we all sit back and wait to happen. Okay. And let's look at that fact that we all are literally sitting back waiting for something to happen, for something to change without doing anything. Yet we allow us to criticize us when there are efforts. Oh, those efforts don't work. Why do this? Well, my question to you is, why not? Oh, that's just, you know, another dead rapper. Really? Have you taken the time to figure out who this person was? He was somebody's child. Okay, we all have kids. Never mind his career choice. Look at the things that he was doing, and it's relevant. When you have senators of Cory Booker speaking out emotionally upset that this brother lost his life, that doesn't happen. Okay, if he was just some random Joe. So I just ask for a little more compassion and respect. And then Sean King went on to bullet point a couple of other things about why he was respected. The first thing that he bullet pointed and pointed out is the fact that he was a dope ass lyricist. You know, listen, I get the new rap. You know, some of it is cool. I'm just not of this era. So what I consider to be real hip hop music is what Nipsey Hussle represented. You know, he was younger than me by at least 9 years. However, he embraced, you know, those that came before him, and that molded his rap career. He speaks very highly of people like E-40 and Master P and Jay-Z, and he respects not only their rap styles, but he respects their business mind frame. And he's what I call a real rapper. I know a lot of y'all like, what's real rap? I'll tell you what real rap is, but that's a whole nother segment. Don't get me started. Sean King also, and as you heard, referred to him as a favorite rapper's rapper. And let me explain something to y'all what that truly means, how that's personal to me, because the brother that introduced me to my husband was a mutual friend of both of ours. His name is Double R, Roderick Betts. And he introduced me to Kirk. Unknowingly, they were best friends, especially on the rap scene. They were kind of like rap partners. They were a duo without actually being a group, if that makes any sense. They did a lot of collaborations together, and they were just really dynamic. And then I knew Roderick because we all grew up together in school age. And we were really good friends with his sister. And so I always knew who he was, but I didn't know Kirk. Anyway, you know, Double always regarded Kirk as a rapper's rapper. That's kind of like saying a man's man. You know, if you know or understand how men kind of show appreciation for one another, they always say that's my man's, or, you know, that's a man's man, or however. And that's the way the Double regarded Kirk, by saying that he's a rapper's rapper. because he speaks the language. He's on point. He's charismatic. He's a hell of a storyteller. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on about how talented Kirk is, but more so than anything, it's very close to home because Double was that rapper also. He was probably one of the best rappers of his time in our community, right alongside with my husband. So for him to look up to my husband in that way says a lot about him as a humbled human being who, by the way, also tragically lost his life to violence. Again, that's another podcast. And you ask why Nipsey Hussle's demise hits home. That brother looks just like every other brother that I have had the opportunity to embrace, had the opportunity to get to know, and had the opportunity to stand over their casket and say farewell. It's to the point where, you know, I'm practically about numb about going to funerals and saying goodbye to a lot of brothers that I feel, you know, meant a lot to the community, regardless of their economic status, regardless of, you know, their poor choices and their everyday. They were still good human beings, good dudes. And I don't think that that should go away because they tragically were taken from us. And like you said, you know, Nipsey mirrored the independence of 40P. And from my own personal point of view, when it comes to mirroring somebody who's maintaining their independence and being strong, especially speaking in terms of female MCs, y'all better give it up to my homegirl 3D Nati. She's showing y'all, you know, you don't have to conform and you can get out here and be successful. She might not be mainstream, but girlfriend is doing all right. She ain't hungry. She ain't broke. She got property, you know, business. She does her own videos. She does her own music. You know what I'm saying? She's strictly independent. And if you ask about her, if you want to know about her, the mainstream know who she is, but she refuses to, you know, dance to the beat of their drum. And so my hat's off to her when it comes to independence. And I think that's what Nipsey also appreciated. And that ended up being his path also. He gave back to his community in abundance. The brother was all about rebuilding the community. He brought up his priorities. And, you know, which basically meant that he cared about the people that were around him, cared so much that he made certain that he provided them with jobs. Okay. And let me just point something else out. I was listening to Snoop's podcast one time, I forget what it's called. But anyway, it's a podcast and you can catch it on YouTube, and he was interviewing Redman. And one of the things that made sense to me that I hadn't thought about before, do you realize that the hip hop culture and community is about the only place that will give brothers that are coming out of prison who are felons not only a second chance, but to have one hell of a career? Like, you don't see other regular corporations offering and extending that opportunity to brothers who are getting out of jail and have these felons on their backgrounds. You know, society does away with these people. And so the saga continues for, you know, those reasons, unfortunately. But you know, so I respect the hip hop community for that. You know, we don't leave our fallen soldiers by the wayside. We will embrace you. We will pick you up. You got the talent, you got the opportunity and the means, you know, you can get out there and eat regardless of what you done done. I mean, you know, nowhere can you do that. I mean, it's felons that, you know, can't even vote. It's a sister right now that had a felony. I believe it was in Texas, and she went to go vote. The voting polls and the ladies that were clerks that were there told her, yeah, you're okay to vote. She showed them their ID. She went in, she voted. They turned right around and locked her up for that because she was a felon and she wasn't allowed to vote. Okay. So my hat's off to Nipsey for recognizing that these people needed somewhere to go. They needed to be embraced. They needed to be loved, and they needed to hear that from somebody who still spoke their language. And he did a great job and was great at doing that. Now, there's another little video that I found, or another part of Sean King's podcast that I found to be very, very interesting, that I want to just knock that out. And then we'll move on to one other video before we close it out. This is about two opposing narratives regarding what actually happened to Nipsey. You know, there are people who feel that there may have been some type of conspiracy. There are people who feel that, you know, it's just more black on black crime and they need to do something about it. You know, and like he said, we don't have to agree, but we need to at least do it peacefully and respectfully and keep an open mind. And again, this is The Breakdown with Sean King. Here we go.
Two opposing narratives right now about Nipsey's murder, and I want to unpack them both. Both of them are about black-on-black violence, and both stances really need to be acknowledged, unpacked, and understood. The first position is this, and it was expressed to me first by Dr. Malina Abdullah, who is not just the head of Black Lives Matter in Los Angeles, but is a brilliant scholar and contributor to the North Star. Malina and others have said that we can't allow the murder of Nipsey Hussle be used as an excuse to advance the trope of black-on-black violence, saying that it's out of hand and must be dealt with aggressively. Now, maybe you're hearing me and saying, but damn, Sean, it was black-on-black violence. After all, it was a black man who shot and killed Nipsey. And you are right in that regard. But let me back up Malina's point and tell you why I think she's actually right. In the United States, we have more police officers per person than any other nation in the world. And the American government has often weaponized those police departments against black and brown and immigrant communities. What Dr. Malina is saying is that if we allow the targeted murder of one person, Nipsey Hussle, to give the LAPD permission to flood our communities with police, entire neighborhoods, in the name of black-on-black violence, then we've made a huge mistake, because Nipsey wasn't murdered because we had a surge of black-on-black violence. He was targeted and killed by one violent person, and we can't allow that one murder to cause the police to justify some war in our communities. Are you understanding what I'm trying to say here? Because here's the thing. When a white person targets and kills another white person, American police don't flood any white neighborhoods with cops. They don't start any wars on white people. Hell, even when a white person kills 10 people or 20 people or 50 people, American law enforcement doesn't then hold that against all white people. But that's exactly what happens in all communities of color, and it's not okay. My friend and brother, Dr. Ibram Kendi, in his amazing book, Stamped from the Beginning, breaks down how it's actually a form of racism to hold all black people responsible for the act of one black person. And he's right. But so are my friends Mai Son and Tamika Mallory, two respected activists and organizers who've both experienced firsthand the devastating impact of gun violence in our communities. Over the past few days, I've seen both of them saying that we absolutely need to find better ways of addressing the violence in our communities. We can't ignore it or pretend like it's not a problem. It is a problem. We can't refuse to mention it, either out of embarrassment or even caution. Gun violence is a problem in our neighborhoods. And here's where I think both schools of thought converge and they agree. And it's that we both believe more police and more prosecutors are the exact opposite of what our communities need.
So, you know, that kind of brings me to my next point, because I have a different take. I totally agree with what he said. I totally agree with the two opposing narratives, because they all provide substance to a problem that has gone far too gone on far too long. So I'm not, in my statement coming up here in a moment. I am not, and I repeat, I am not ignoring those narratives. I am not in disagreement with those narratives. However, let's be honest with ourselves and look at our history. Every time there is a leader that represents us with truth, with stance, with future, with education, with revolutionary, with vision, and with compassion and love, and they publicly stand up and say, hey, y'all, this is the real. For whatever reason, since y'all don't like to use the conspiracy idea, I don't even have to use that term, because to me, it ain't conspiracy. To me, it's business as usual. Okay. But for whatever reason, if you notice, those leaders are dead. By no uncertain terms, we no longer have that beacon of light, of hope, that looks like us, that speaks our language, to the point where you've got people that are complacent about organizing because they don't know if it's going to mean their demise. All right, let's just be honest about that. This man was doing more for his community than what was ever to be expected of a rolling 60s Crip. Okay? They don't want our streets to be peaceful. They being the government, they lose money if it is. Okay? Prison is big business. Let's just be honest here. Let's just imagine if we took ownership of, you know, having these peace rallies, which the Bloods and the Crips did that, you know, and I applaud them. They were beautiful. I love to see especially Black men stand up against, you know, the expectation that all you're worthy of is killing off each other. Okay, but let's be real. That's not what they want. And every time we've done that, history has shown you time and time again that there is ultimate destruction. Look at the Black Wall Street scenario in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They came up with some oblivious, oh, this Black man just whistled at a white woman or tried to holler at a white woman. And the next thing you know, the entire community was set on fire. And those brothers and sisters lost everything. That don't just happen. Okay. Nipsey was exposing the government for the disease that they are putting in our food by working on and preparing to release the documentary of Dr. Sebi, who, by the way, found cures for some of the most deadliest diseases that we faced in our lifetime, AIDS and cancer. And he beat both of his cases in the Supreme Court and in the state government court. He beat both of those cases because they could not prove that he had not provided those cures. They have evidence where his supplements and his eating regimens that he was educating people on, it was working. Okay, well, it's ironic that that same person ended up going to prison and coming out sick. And now he's gone. Now, maybe this is like, you know, what you want to call it. I don't know, whatever you guys want to call it, a conspiracy. I don't know, but I'm no fool. And the same things can't keep happening to the same type of people with the same type of message over and over and over and over and over again. And you tell me that there ain't nothing to it. I'm not going to go for that. And I think that's what they want y'all to do. They want y'all to be complacent. They want you to be caught up in your colonized narratives, because that's what they've provided for you to believe. They, you know, and Sean King talked about some stuff that I talked about in another podcast also about how we have been pressured to conform because they don't want us to have our own identity, our own thought processes, our own ideas. They don't want us to be who we are. And then we, speaking as Black people, agree. Oh, yeah. White folks, yeah, they say you ain't supposed to do this. You ain't supposed to look like this. So we're going to turn our nose up at you. You know, he even, Sean King on that same podcast, even called out Obama for criticizing a lot of these brothers and sisters for the way that they dress and the way that they are in their unique way. Because that's, he used a term that he called it standardized politics or something along those lines, where if you're not the quote unquote standard, then you don't deserve respect. And so all too often we do it to ourselves. Then you want to know why there's lack of self-love, because we ain't loving on these brothers. We don't feel that they deserve to be treated equally and have a fair shot. All right. So back to an article that I saw, they did a comparison about Bunchy Carter. And it says Bunchy Carter, leader of the L.A. chapter of the Black Panthers in the 60s, was killed by members of the United Slaves Organization. United Slaves Organization. This was a group of black people that had come together to try to, which I think the whole organization was smoke and mirrors now that I think about it, because it says it was an FBI infiltrated black nationalist group. He was murdered because the LAPD and the FBI perceived him as a threat for educating the people on politics, firearms, first aid training, and more. His death, along with John Huggins, was brushed off as a simple dispute between two black men at UCLA. Does this narrative not sound familiar to you? Yeah, they got the brother on tape shooting Nipsey, coming back, shooting him again and kicking him and all that kind of stuff. But who better to get to do something like that, who already got hate for this brother anyway? If this conspiracy, or I'm sorry, I'm not going to use that term, if this is the narrative, and I'm only entertaining it because we owe it to brothers like Nipsey and our other leaders such as Bunchy Carter to look at this whole thing in a complete, well-rounded, 360-degree point of view. You can't just one side on, the situation and ignore everything else, because once you start ignoring everything else, we become apathetic and we no longer care. You know what I'm saying? You gotta be able to embrace it all, whether you think you can do anything about it or not, at least acknowledge it. And then they kind of did the comparison with Nipsey, a member of the Rolling 60s, was killed by a member of the same gang, who, by the way, this Kevin Holder is a government informant. Okay, he was already working for them. And that was known. All right. He was murdered days before meeting with the LAPD about ways to prevent gang violence. So not only was Nipsey a businessman, but he was trying to create peace in the streets. He was really working toward that. And you do have some police officers who was embracing this brother and was willing to help him. But let's face it, they low on the totem pole. A lot of them. They don't call the shots. Some of them do get in their uniform to, with hopes of making a difference. There are some good police officers out here, but then, you know, they jump into the frying pan, you know, a lot of times. And so my post to our people about that, or responding to this article, just basically says, we're good at brushing stuff off about our people when it suits our colonized narrative. Brothers killing brothers ain't always just about the streets. Who do you think run the streets? Pause. Who do you think run the streets? It ain't us. Okay? And that ain't, you know, nothing that we don't already know. You don't have to be white and wear a badge and a suit to be a government official and be brainwashed to hate your own people and yourself. So much more to the story. Because I do ultimately feel, however we look at this, it's all about self-hate. We don't have enough love for ourselves. You know, we are so saturated with PTSD, poor diet, poor economics, lack of resources, poor education, ignorance, lack of love within the four walls of the homes where we grew up, if we have four walls. Then to get outside of these four walls and not find any love from those who probably can make a difference, but choose not to because this brother's pants is sagging. You gonna love him or you gonna hate him? No, I don't want to see your butt cheeks. I tell these brothers all the time to pull your pants up. But I respect them. And I look them in their eyes and I talk to them like they're human beings. I don't have to turn my nose up. And, you know, I had a girl, homegirl, that used to do that. And back in the day, and it used to anger me. Okay, maybe this brother ain't, you know, the status quo. But damn, you ain't got to be nasty to him. But when a person get enough of that, then they don't feel that they have no hope. They're hopeless because they may have been looking to you for help. But you know, you got your face scrunched up because, you know, they're not who you want them to be or who you want them to look like. So we have to embrace each other in order to restore the importance of self-love, because ultimately they don't want to hear it at this point. It was a video that somebody posted on Instagram, which was really hit home also because they, some brothers that's in prison, and you know, one of the dudes was like, yeah, they used to talk peace to us, but we didn't want to hear that shit. Because, you know, after so much of, you know, the lack of love and support from folks that really did, that we wanted to love us, you know, they didn't love us no more. So we didn't care about ourselves, you know, and you got to get out of that. We got to start teaching these people, or at least allow the marathon to continue and show them, yeah, I am just like you, but let me show you this information right here real quick. Just give me 5 minutes. You know, it don't take much to have a conversation with somebody. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. You might not be able to save the world, but at the very least, we should embrace each other a little bit better than the way we do. And I just think that that is his legacy. I think Nipsey truly tried to stand out among you know, all of the riffraff and all of the naysayers and all of the people that, oh, well, he was tatted up. You know, we heard all the criticism. We know y'all looking at him, you know, down your noses. We know this. Why? Because you do us like that. And the sad part about it is y'all look just like we do. You just happen to put on a suit, or you just happen to be evolved, or, you know, into whatever it is that helped you to be better. But we stop reaching back. And then, you know, it doesn't help that the people that do reach back, who are our true leaders, I mean, I can run down a list of names and I'm sure you know them all. They're murdered. They're killed. They're ostracized. They're locked away in prisons for the rest of their lives as political prisoners. But then we've got the hip hop community whose doors are still open. And this is what these brothers gravitate to, because they feel that that's all there is. They don't know anything else. So we definitely need to keep that marathon going, because that's what he was trying to do. He was introducing so much more and being a beacon of light and hope to a community who feels hopeless. The voice of the voiceless. So for me personally, Nipsey, to your family, to Lauren, to your mother, who is so beautiful. I saw her video posted on Instagram. Man, that lady is stronger than I could ever be. You know, she definitely shed light on embracing the fact that death is part of the process. We are all going to eventually be in that space. But what we do right here on this earth is what matters. And that's what Nipsey's legacy stood for and it still stands for. So rest in peace to you. Condolences to your loved ones. Condolences to your children. Shout out to all of the celebrities who have used their platform and their voice to also make a difference. Sean King listed a few of them, but I'm going to all double back and say shout out to Master P, because, brother, you definitely have been an example of what it means to be independent. And I'm praying that all of y'all who aspire to pick up the mic and do your thing, do your thing. The prominent word in that statement is your. Own your own music. Don't allow yourself to be sold. Don't get out here and sell yourself out. But then once you take a few steps forward, reach back and grab your homeboy and just let him know, hey, man, look at what I got going on. Perhaps this will work for you. Even if you learn a new skill, show somebody. You know, each one teach one. We've lost that idea. We've lost that narrative, you know. And we got to stop killing each other, man. It's just, you know, it's important to value life again. So rest in peace, Nipsey. I hope I just did you a solid. I didn't want to make this about, you know, anything that was of your past that people have, you know, knocked you for. Because frankly, honestly, you know, you would hope that somebody else would give you the grace. If it ever came down to it being your life and them highlighting who you were, because we all have made mistakes. I'm going to close out with this one sister's video who I feel really, really hit the mark on what she had to say. And with respect to Nipsey and his legacy and reminding people, you know, to just be a little bit more compassionate when it comes to, you know, talking about him. We all have our own opinions, and that's fine, you know, but, you know, opinions are just like you-know-whats, and we all got one. But, you know, let's just show some more respect and compassion for one another. This is Ida Rodriguez. She is a comedian, but she hits home. Rest in peace, Nipsey. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for everything that you attempted to do. The marathon continues.
I just got into a pointless conversation with one of my trolls who thought that it was cool to blame what's happening to black men on liberals and liberalism, feminism, and globalism. And I beg to differ. What is happening to black men is a capitalism, because people of color have been a currency of this country and the world far too long. Now, I'm going to say a couple of things, and I've disabled the comments so that I can get through it. I'm not ignoring you, Village, because you guys are very important to me. But as the mother of a black man, I feel like I have to say this. First of all, those of you who have taken to social media to point out that Nipsey was a gangster and a former criminal, shame on you. Because he had made a turn, and in his evolution, he was working very hard to help his community. And not a lot of people do that. A lot of people who are rooted, living their lives, which is rooted in crime, don't usually have the opportunity to make that turn. And he did. But when you want to point out that he was a criminal, look at your administration. Look at the politicians. Look at Las Vegas, which was built on crime, organized crime. Look at all the corporations and longstanding businesses that made so many profit off of slavery, which was an injustice and a crime, whether you want to name that or name it that or not. So why am I so angry? Why I've Latin people saying, why do you take black issues so deeply? Because they're my issues too. Not in addition to just me being the mother of two black children, I'm also a Latina, brown, black woman, ancestry deeply rooted in Africa from Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. And fuck all of that. Why can I not care about what happens to black people as anybody on the planet? It's just so ridiculous. We don't have any solidarity. We don't have unity. They take us down. So listen, if the pharmaceutical companies or the government took Nipsey Hussle down and a black man pulled the trigger, then we got to hold that black man accountable. Because the reasoning in these conspiracies, it makes us apathetic. It makes us feel like we can't do anything about it because something bigger than us. You know what's bigger than us? The envy, the avarice, the jealousy that we take upon ourselves when we see one of our own becoming successful. And listen, I'm not here to make excuses for people who do wrongdoings and injustices to their own, but accountability is of essence in order for our communities to be redirected on the right path for our own success. So I'm going to say this. If you think that is cool to point out the sin in somebody else, you would want the grace extended to you for whatever imperfections or whatever secrets or skeletons you have in your own closet, because every single one of us is imperfect. Why does his life matter than anybody else's because he's famous? Why do we make such a big deal? Well, we don't. But the reality of it is that he was famous and he was making an impact in our community. So while we lost a rapper and a celebrity, we also lost a community leader and activist who was actually out there using his platform to make a difference in his own community. And a lot of people who will point that out and criticize him don't have anything better to offer in his place. Third of all, I'm going to say this, and I might receive outrage when we talk about survivors, rape survivors, Holocaust survivors. Why are we not talking about black men in terms of survivors? Because there is clearly a war on them. And yes, many of them are executing these injustices out on their own, but it's not by accident. It is by design. It is absolutely by design. And the fact that a man will pull the trigger on a black man that looks like him is just another form of suicide, because we take ourselves down when we take each other down. So I'm going to take this moment to extend my condolences to Lauren London, those children, Nipsey's family, his father. People lost a human being, and whether he is famous or not, his life matters. And those of you who want to point out that he was a gangster and that he did crimes and that so did Donald Trump, and he's the president of the United States. So I'm going to say this, and this is not a political statement, because this ain't about the left or the right. Our issue with the extinction of the people of color that belong to us and belong to our tribe and our village is all of our responsibility, no matter where you stand on the political aisle. And if you're not mourning Nipsey's loss today and every single young black man that we have lost at the hands of senseless violence, which is a direct result of systemic oppression, then I don't know what to tell you. Get your soul right. Rest in peace, Nipsey, and I hope that God and the Most High extends graces and blessings and abundance and security upon your tribe, because what you were doing for us was big. And I, Aida Rodriguez, appreciate it. I'm out.
Thanks, y'all, for listening. I pray for all of our well-being, our love, and our blessings. It's your girl, Flo. Farewell, Nipsey Hussle. Loving me, loving you, bro. Rest in paradise.